Welcome to the She Read, She Said podcast,
where we read and discuss books about women written by women.
We're your hosts, Megan
and Kate, so sit back,
settle in,
and let the pages come to life.
Well, hello there.
Welcome.
Welcome to an episode abroad, because that's where we are right now.
We have been laughing nonstop trying to get this episode going because we are abroad.
We are currently in England, in Yorkshire, Ilkley, to be specific.
And we do not have our usual setup.
No.
We are not in a closet. We don't have 50 layers of foam around us. We have no blankets on the walls.
We're just like freewheeling it today. So we just want to apologize ahead of time for any noises you may hear, any quality issues in terms of sound, because we just can't do anything about it.
We can't do anything about it. And we're living our dreams. We are traveling. We will not apologize for living our dreams.
It's fitting to be reading Bridgerton in England.
Yes, it is. It was very nice to be sitting by the window looking outside on lovely Yorkshire, lovely Ilkley, and be reading about Regency England.
So it all really worked out. Spoiler alert, we are reading The Duke and I by Julia Quinn. I guess we didn't really say that.
That's why we are here today.
Our travel experience is much more important than what we're actually going to be talking about. But that's what we're going to be discussing today.
Yes.
And for those of you who don't know, this is the series that the show Bridgerton is based on. Mm-hmm. We're very excited for the next season.
I am feral for the next season. I haven't even seen it yet. And I am claws out, ready, just dying to see it.
Because we do love a bit of romance. We love a period piece. And Bridgerton is just kind of a happy, feel-good, sexy, romantic show.
Yeah, it scratches a lot of itches for entertainment needs.
So while we were waiting, we thought we could read The Duke and I and dive into the book series.
Yes.
To kind of tide us over. And that's what we're going to talk about today, because we have some feelings. We have a spectrum of feelings.
Yes, we do.
About this book. Maybe before we actually get into all of that, we should do our little spoiler-free section. Mm-hmm. So, Kate, who would you say that this book is for?
So, for the first 60 to 75% of the book, mm-hmm. I would say this book was for anyone who was looking for just like a really fun, lighthearted read. It has the elements of a big family, obviously romance. Obviously, if you're into historical romances, I think it just has such like a light, fun feel.
Yeah.
That I think it's nice to sometimes just read a story that doesn't go super deep, that it really
absolutely
is just about like the fun. However, getting into the last 25% of the book, this is a spoiler and a trigger warning. If you have seen the first season of Bridgerton, this will not be a surprise to you.
Although
I would say it's worse in the book than it is in the show. There is a scene where our heroine Daphne rapes her husband. Like, there's no nice way to say it. That's what happens. And it is not written in a way that acknowledges what happens. First of all, it's written. That is something that happens, and it is not acknowledged. And for me, in terms of recommending this book to people, I feel like I can't in good conscience do that without putting that out there first. Mm-hmm. And I have, since finishing the book, gone and looked online. I have been in different corners of the internet, as I am wont to do.
Just to kind of gauge where everyone is sort of sitting.
I was trying to gauge the future books, because I know that this is a very beloved book series.
Yeah.
And I think having such an event like that in the first book is really odd to mm-hmm. me, that then other people would love the series. However, from what I've gleaned and been told by other people who've read the series, the rest of the books are not like that at all. She's actually very good about consent in the rest of the books. And I've seen a lot of people say that they love the series, but just don't even read the first book.
Mm-hmm.
Don't even bother because of that element. And I haven't read the other books, so I can't, again, in
speak
good conscience,
that.
Speak to that, recommend the other books. However, based on the first 75% of the book, I would say that, yeah, if you're looking for the fun, sexy, romantic, historical romance read, this series might be for you. However, if you're going to read the first book, I think that's a very important thing to know. That's a really big triggering thing for a lot of people, men and women. That's something that a lot of us just don't even want to read because because it's disgusting and vile.
Yeah.
And there's no sense of consciousness around it and no awareness of what's happening in it. And definitely no justice for the Duke, this character. So with that being said, I have a hard time saying, oh, this is for so-and-so, because that just feels really flippant. And it's an important thing to put out there and discuss and be aware of, because it is woefully mishandled mm-hmm. in this book. And it was a very big bummer for me, because it definitely ruined a really big chunk of the story.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting, I think, talking about the book, because like you said, the first, 60 to 75%,
yeah.
I don't have the exact math
of the book. I am not a mathematician, as we have previously stated.
But it's like my reading experience of that first bit was something very different.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very happy and it felt good, and it was nice to be in that space of just, like you said, being in a lighter historical romance. Like, mm-hmm. I love the Regency period and just everything that we get with that. But then when you get to the other side of the event, it's hard not to look at your heroine in a slightly different light.
Yes.
And also the Duke in a way, because of how it's handled.
Yeah.
So in retrospect, that just kind of, I don't know, like, it does cast a shadow on all of the things that I really loved about the book.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about our experience of reading, but just maybe keep that in mind, because I do want to talk about what we actually liked mm-hmm. before we get to that point.
I think for me personally, I am comfortable with going forward with the other books and seeing how I feel about them. Of course, if other stuff like this pops up, then I might need to not finish it. But I think that's just a really personal choice. I think for a lot of other people, they would maybe choose not to go forward with the series because that scene is what it is and it isn't acknowledged. And the conversation around consent is just so terribly handled and just very, very ignorant. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But for me personally, I am comfortable going forward with the series, having heard that in the future books, this is not an element, that she is actually very good about consent and has seemed to improve and there's more awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if I feel like that's not the case, then I might just have to say no thank you to the book series. But I really did love that first 60%.
I know. I mean, maybe we should just get into it.
Yeah.
I feel the same way that you do about it. So let's just dive into our reading experience.
Okay.
And we'll just kind of start with talking about overall thoughts of the book and maybe just focusing more on the first 60%, because we will get into everything that comes later.
Yeah.
It's definitely something we're going to discuss. So if you are here and you don't want any spoilers, then now is the time to scurry away, because we are getting into it.
We're talking about it. So now that they're gone, our gentle reader is gone. Megan.
Yes.
What was your reading experience of this book? Minus.
Minus the event.
Minus the event.
I was absolutely enchanted by the Bridgerton family, the mm-hmm. world of Bridgerton. Obviously, watching the show, I had a lot of things already in my brain. But it was really nice to be able to enjoy the book as a separate thing. It's like, I did envision a lot of the same people playing the characters and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just a really fun, it's really difficult for me to say the words like feel good read, because it didn't become that.
Yeah.
But at the beginning, it was just really nice to be in a space of, these are the stakes. They're not very high.
No.
I love a period piece. I loved the family dynamics that we get. I think that's what I really latched on to, like I do in the show, is
mm-hmm.
I just love the Bridgertons. I love the sibling relationships. I love all her brothers so much. And I love the whistle down component. Mm-hmm. I think that's really fun to have the gossip and to see how all of the characters take whistle down into their lives, where some of them are very upset by her presence. Mm-hmm. Other ones, it's like she's doing them a favor. And how some of the characters, like some of the men who wouldn't really read whistle down, like slowly getting into it. Like, I really loved that aspect and the sillinesses that come along with family and day-to-day life, and for obviously the woman at the time trying to find a husband.
Mm-hmm.
I just really liked being in that space.
Yeah, I feel like I just had a smile on my face most of the time. Even if I wasn't laughing, I had like a pleasant, like I kept waiting for you to turn around and look at me, because we were reading in the same room. And I was like, oh, just in my head the entire time. had the like, oh, how lovely kind of energy mm-hmm. in my head. And I just had a smile on my face the entire time.
I mean, we were both definitely giggling at random things in the book. <I know. laughs> And it was nice in a way to just not be in a book that is anything other than what it is. Like, this isn't meant to be a deep book. This isn't meant to be like a deep character study and all that. No. It's just lighter and fun, and I was really here for it.
Yeah. And do I like a fake dating trope? Yes. Of course I do. You set it in Regency England and you top it with protective brothers that are all equally hot in their own right. I'm going to be sold.
Oh, absolutely. Well, let's talk about the Bridgertons, because they're legitimately what I loved about this book.
Yes.
They're the heart and soul that really kept me there. Mm-hmm. With the Bridgertons that we meet, obviously, this is a family with 8 children. Their father has passed on. So Violet is their mother. Mm-hmm. She's a single mom. The youngest is 10, and the oldest, Anthony, is pushing 30.
I think he's 28.
Okay.
Pushing 30. Pushing 30.
So that's a big wide range of things going on in your household. Mm-hmm. And the siblings that we get to know a little bit in this book would be Anthony, Benedict, Colin, and then Daphne.
Mm-hmm. The older ones. We get little peeks into Gregory and Hyacinth.
Yeah. We got to talk about Hyacinth. She really stole the show when she was on the page.
Yes, she did.
I mean, what did you think of the group as a whole? I know that we love them, but maybe what were your, like, some of your favorite bits that we got with the Bridgertons?
I mean, starting with Mama Violet, I was so fascinated because we've seen the show, like we said. So I obviously had preconceived notions of all of these characters going into it. It was the same thing with our Twilight episode.
Absolutely.
When you've seen the movies or the shows, the TV film remakings of a book, you just have an idea. And so going into the book, seeing what Violet is was so hilarious to me because she was much more Mother Bennet than I thought she would be, because in the show she definitely has a bit of that, but it's a lot softer.
Oh yeah, she's Mrs. Benedicting all over the place. The fact that she gives Daphne and Anthony a list, like a handwritten list of go see if this works for you,
yeah,
killed me.
And in the tone of this book, I know that characters like that can be kind of a lot, but I actually really loved it, and mm-hmm. it really tickled me, especially when we get the little insights into her brain and how she handles her children. Like when she's with Anthony and she starts rambling and he leaves and she's like, oh, children, they're so easy. All I have to do is ramble and I can get rid of them. It's like the way a mother manipulates her children. She's mm-hmm. like, children are so easy. I'm like, that's hilarious.
Yeah, because there is an aspect to her that's very warm and mm-hmm. loving. Like, she is a good mom. She's a bit chaotic at times.
Yeah, she wants Daphne to marry for love because she had a very wonderful relationship with her husband. But there's also a part of her that would like to stick it to Mrs. Featherington.
Oh, absolutely. And I love it that especially her sons are terrified of her.
Yes.
At times.
It's her house, even though technically it's Anthony's house. Yeah. Or Anthony. I say Anthony because the British people say Anthony.
I like Anthony better.
I like Anthony.
But I love that when she's in her like matchmaker mode, like at the ball, mm-hmm. that these 3 grown-ass men are too terrified to go over and save their sister because they don't want to deal with their mother.
Yes.
I loved that.
I just love a woman who can command the people around them. Mm-hmm. And like, she has command of her children.
Yeah, she does. And on like a slightly more emotional note, I thought it was really, really sweet when Simon brought her flowers.
Yes.
And she got emotional and Daphne realized like, oh, I think we as her children maybe need to do more nice things for our mother.
Yes.
Because no one had brought her flowers since her husband was alive. Mm-hmm. She's a woman too.
Yeah. And I really liked getting that insight into her, especially because a lot of times I think we view this like overbearing mother characters, especially in these period pieces, as just being so annoying, so whatever. However, as a woman at the time, that is your job in terms of how you can help set your children up for success. So aligning your kids, specifically your daughters, with a husband that they're the person that their daughters are going to spend their lives with. Like mm-hmm. for women at the time, they didn't have jobs. So your they were legally owned, as Simon likes to remind us in the book.
Shut up, Simon.
Shut up, Simon. But that's very much a reality that for a woman, your home life, whether your husband is at home or not, because you're going to be living in his home and running his household, that one way or another, his home and him, that's your life. So as a mother, it would feel so important and kind of like, this is the only way I can be successful as a mother in terms of setting my children up for success, happiness, all of the things. And again, specifically your daughters, is to make a good match. And I think that's something we just kind of forget a lot of times, because like with Mrs. Bennett, I think she's like the prime example where you just like roll your eyes and it's ridiculous. However, there's a reality to it. And I did love seeing those softer sides of Violet and seeing how she is a woman and she really does love her children despite all of her flaws and her tendency to not tell Daphne about things that are important to a successful marriage. And I think that kind of goes against the idea of setting your child up for success when, you know, if your job is to be a good wife, it might be beneficial for people to know certain aspects of what being in a relationship is and what being a wife is.
Sure. Beyond the he will perform intimacies on your person.
Like, don't worry about it. He'll tell you.
She's like, but what do I do?
That was one of my favorite things in the book. She's like, no, but what do I do? That is me in life all the time. People are so vague about things. Like, I think about all my job trainings. I like how I'm now comparing sex to job training.
Oh, those types of job trainings.
Those types of job trainings where they're like, yeah, just, you know, go help those people over there. But it's like, what do I do? How? What?
Just do it.
That's just always me. What do I do? So that made me laugh to see it in the context of sex. What do I do?
Yeah, I really just, like you said, loved seeing all of the different aspects of Violet. And yeah, I mean, at the time, women, with very few exceptions, like, they couldn't inherit.
Yeah.
So I really liked seeing it kind of portrayed in a lighter way. I mean, obviously, we get it in Pride and Prejudice with Charlotte's character, where she has to give Elizabeth Bennet a reality check of, I have no prospects. I'm 27. A girl.
I'm afraid. I'm
terrified. And women just had to do what they had to do. And obviously, this is an upper class family.
Yeah.
They're going to have more opportunity than most. But even looking at Mrs. Featherington, where Violet has one daughter out in society and Mrs. Featherington has three.
Yeah.
So the idea of you need men in this world because of how it's been set up to provide your daughters with a future.
Yeah.
That's not how it should be.
No.
But that's what the society at the time had done. And it's like, you can't blame women for husband hunting because they had no other choice.
That's your livelihood.
Yeah. So I really liked the tone with this book, where it was fun and it was really nice to see different sides to a woman who is navigating that, like you said.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved Violet.
Yeah. Except for when she wouldn't tell Daphne about sex. I'm like, do you know how much we could have avoided, Violet?
Seriously. That is her one failure, I feel like, in this book, where it's like, you've had 8 children.
I really wanted Daphne to go yell at her about it.
I did too.
We get that in the show, and it's like rightfully deserved.
Absolutely. I really loved it when Daphne's like, wait, so you've done this 8 times?
She's like, what? Yes? No?
It's funny, but also it's not funny at the same time.
Yeah.
Because that's just another level of things that women weren't told about, that when it happened to them, like, that's a traumatic experience, even with their periods, where women think that they're dying. Like, there's so much information at the time that was withheld, that just when you look at what women had to endure, the surprises, it's horrifying.
It's disgusting.
So yeah, she was a wonderful character to read, at least for me.
Yeah.
Another delight on the page was Antony.
I love my drama queen.
He tickled me so much. We open with him being the really sweet brother, and I loved the fact that he wants Daphne to marry for love, and that she's been a really good sister to him, and he's the one that breaks up with her, like, boyfriends for her. I love that.
Every relationship is a triangle, because Antony's in the corner ending it for Daphne, or blocking it for Daphne.
I mean, at the beginning, Antony is calmer.
He's calmer. He's much more wicked than I expected him to be. Him bringing his list to the ball and sharing it. That's just so little wicked of him. He's so fun. And then it took a turn.
The turn that it took, it had me in stitches, because every time he got angry, every time he spiraled or was stewing, it was like my favorite place to be.
Oh my God, absolutely. I think it's that energy of, we on Patreon have gone through Throne of Glass, and without major spoilers, there is a character that is a little difficult for a bit.
Yeah.
And one of our listeners commented and said that she just doesn't take him that seriously. Like, anything he says, she just doesn't take that seriously. I think about that a lot. That's how I feel about Anthony. Anthony. I just don't take him seriously.
No.
Because he takes himself very seriously.
Which is why it's funny.
It's both him and Simon have that thing where when you take yourself so seriously, it's like they're begging to be teased.
Absolutely.
So I think with Anthony, I just laughed the entire time. I got endless joy from him being upset.
Same. And with him in particular, I wouldn't apply this to Simon, but with Anthony, that begging to be teased thing, that taking yourself so seriously and just like the constant fuming endeared him so much to me.
Yes.
Like,
absolutely.
I just adore him. And I love too that everything that he does, all of his crazy, is stemming from a very real place of loving and wanting to protect his sister.
Yeah, that was a big thing that I liked about the book over the show's representation, specifically just in season one, that Antony's really like, you know what, marry whoever you want. I want you to be happy. You know, if she can't find love, I at least want her to have affection for her husband and like him. And him getting in between Daphne and Simon before he knows about their little ruse, it's like, yeah, of course he would, because he knows Simon has been saying forever, he has it tattooed on his chest, that I will never marry. And he has a sister who wants to marry and who wants love, let alone it's not proper in society to be going and having affairs for proper young ladies. So what would the options be there other than, oh, my friend is going to try to seduce my sister?
Yeah.
That's being a good brother. Again, it's because he knows Simon and he knows Daphne and knows that that's just not in the stars. He says he's a good man, but he's not for you. So I can't get mad at him because,
no,
I mean, he's not wrong. Simon isn't doing it with good intentions at first.
No, and I mean, Simon's pretty upfront with Daphne about, like, I don't want to get married, I never want to have kids, all of those things. And something that I really do love actually about Simon is that he's able to look at Antony and see how far Antony's come, that, like, Antony's really grown into a man and he's in a position where he has to take care of his siblings. Like, he's the head of his family, but that doesn't just mean you're in charge of your title and the estate and all that.
You're not just signing papers all day.
No, it's that you are responsible for the well-being of your sisters, your brothers, and that's a very serious thing. So even Simon, who is the recipient of Antony's hellfire, he can't blame him either. Like, he's not mad at that, and he admires him for it.
Yeah.
Because it's good intentioned, and Simon means what he says about not wanting this stuff. And when Daphne is the exact opposite, like you said, like, her dream is to get married and have children. It's like, this man is not for you.
No.
So I loved
it. It just tickled me. He's so dramatic because it's just starting off when they come off the dance floor and they've just decided that the ruse is gonna go on. And Antony immediately says, and should I take a dose of laudanum? For clearly I am fevered. What the devil is going on? I'm like, oh my God, he belongs on the stage. he is for the drama queens.
He does.
I love him for it.
I love that they get to a point with him where they have no other choice but to tell him, because it will be a bigger problem to keep him in the dark. And there's a comment made about, oh, he only raised his voice 7 times. Antony, that was pretty good.
Do you know what my favorite Antony moment was?
What?
Is at the end when she gives him the letter and she makes him promise not to open it. And he is just looking at it so longingly.
I know.
And she's like, I know if I don't make you promise, you would open this. That, like, he's just pouting because he wants to read her letter and he wants to beat the shit out of Simon. But just his mannerisms in that scene absolutely kill me. That, like, he would be the brother that would go in and read her letter.
But also on the other side of that, it's so endearing, the fact that she's like, I know that if you make a promise to me, you will never break it.
Yeah.
God, that's so sweet. I just love him so much.
He's just a silly man, and I love him. And that's what makes me want to continue the series.
Yes.
Because I know his book is next.
Yeah. So I think we're going to have to.
We're going to have to.
Well, there's two more Bridgerton brothers. Mm-hmm. So Benedict is next in line.
Yeah.
Because they're in alphabetical order, if you didn't
I
know.
I love that.
I do too. I think
that's amazing.
Benedict, we don't really get that much with.
No.
To me, the two things I wrote down about Benedict is that Daphne notes that he's the most protective. Mm-hmm. And I really liked when they're at the duel that Benedict was insistent that Daphne get to have her say.
Yeah.
I thought that was really telling into his character.
Yes, definitely.
So it's like, I also like Benedict. I don't really know him that much.
Yeah, I think out of the older brothers, we get the least with him. And I'm like, I can get on board. Benedict on the show is very cute.
He's so cute.
So I can definitely get on board with that.
But we do get a little bit more with Colin.
I love Colin.
I'm really here for Colin.
It made me a bajillion times more excited for season 3. Mm-hmm. Because book Colin, what he's throwing down in book 1, I can pick up.
Oh my god, yes. He is wicked. He has the devil may care attitude. He's traveled. He's very flirtatious. He's very handsome. He's the closest with Daphne in age. Mm-hmm. So the two of them were always doing pranks, or rather he was doing pranks and Daphne was going along with him. Mm-hmm. And I really like their relationship too.
Yeah, I liked the mix of he is very light and funny, but he has these really great moments. Like when he looks at her and he says, "You've got it bad, don't you?" And he just sees that his sister's in love.
Yeah.
And I think he picks up on it and takes it a little bit more seriously.
He does.
And I love when he goes to her to tell her that his friend saw her going to the gardens with Simon, and she's talking about the duel, and he asks her, "What do you want to do?" And I love that. I love that because obviously Antony and Benedict are in the study.
They're going to be partaking in the duel.
They're not asking her about what she wants. And mm-hmm. I love that Colin is the one to go to her and ask, "What do you want to do?"
And the fact that he is willing to help her to actually take her there. It's like, he shouldn't take her anywhere. Like, it's not safe to take anyone to a duel.
Yes.
But I love that he's willing to be the brother that's like, Daphne wants to do this. She loves Simon. Mm-hmm. This is where her heart is. And he honors that and takes her.
I think he just has that really good balance of, he has the protective older brother energy while also obviously giving her a choice and letting her do her thing. Because I love when the Duke is off at his other home and she's in London and Colin comes in and he says, "Daphne, I'm ordering you right now to tell me where the bastard is hiding." And they go back and forth and she's like, "You can leave. It's none of your business." And then he softens and he reaches out and he takes her hand and he says, "I'll let you handle this as you see fit." And then he says, "For now, don't think I'll let this situation continue indefinitely." So he's letting her handle it. But also, when you're protective of someone and you love someone, I mean, like, I feel like I would do this for you. I would go off and be like, if your husband was away, I would go drag him or like go verbally take him down.
Absolutely.
So I'm like, it's not just a brother-sister thing. It's just a love thing.
I mean, I was going to ask you, out of the three visitors that she gets, did you like Violet, Antony, or Colin coming over to rip into the situation better?
I loved Colin the most in terms of how he handled it. Mm-hmm. I just laughed the entire time with Antony, though.
Antony, that like, taking out the staff. He's like, "You had a butler."
She's like, "I don't even know how he got up there. I don't even know how he got to my bedroom. He would have had to kill like 50 servants." He's looking at her waste basket with all of her thrown away letters and he's debating if he could lunch for them. Like, he wants to be so involved. And I think it's so endearing.
Yeah, I just love throughout the entire book that we got so many moments, even at the end when they show up again. It's like, we're not leaving until we're convinced that you love her.
Yeah, Colin saying, "We have a few demands before we'll let you keep Daphne."
That was one of my favorite Colin moments.
"We'll let you keep her."
And then even with them having their nice kiss at the end, and then they look over and the brothers are still there.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite descriptions of Antony looking at the ceiling, Benedict checking his nails, and Colin staring with no shame.
Colin so much. And even Violet getting a little action coming back into the house to drag her sons out by the ear.
Yeah.
And then telling the Duke, you know, another week and I would have been here.
Yeah. Because it's been months. It's not like he's been gone 2 days and they're being this way. He's been gone for months. So I loved all of the Bridgerton stuff. I thought it was so fun. Again, Hyacinth being her little flirtatious, wise 40-year-old inner self.
I loved her. That scene was so funny when she's flirting with the Duke.
Yeah.
This doesn't work out. You can wait for me.
Yeah. So the Bridgerton family, I think, definitely brought the story to life and made it so full of love and heart. I see why people glom onto this series just for that. And obviously that makes it really easy to transition through the books because each book is a different sibling. So you have this attachment. And I'm sure, especially as you get into the later books, the attachments grow as you get to the siblings that you haven't had as much time with. I can see how that build would be really addicting and really fun.
Absolutely. Because that's exactly how I feel.
Yeah.
I mean, we can dive in now and talk about Daphne, mm-hmm. our heroine. But overall, that was just what I utterly adored about this book.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like the world of Bridgerton. And when I say that, I mean the world of their family. But Daphne's also a Bridgerton.
She's a D.
She's a D. She's the fourth in line. As our heroine, what did you think of Daphne? Again, we're going to focus on when we meet Daphne for 60% of this story.
I laugh so as not to cry. Yeah, so taking out what she does at the end. Really a lot of the things I loved, aside from the Bridgertons, just when it comes to Daphne and Simon and their relationship, it really was before they got married or kind of like through the wedding night.
Oh, yeah.
Because as soon as they get married, and we'll talk more about their relationship, they're having a tiff and then mm-hmm. some more tiffs and fights and then really bad stuff. So I'm just going to talk about Daphne. Just going to talk about Daphne in that first chunk, mm-hmm. because I think the character we're presented with is very different than the kind of character that does what she does. I really like Daphne right off the bat.
Yeah.
We obviously get to see her pretty quickly with a lot of different people, with her mother, with her brother, and then the meet cute with Simon happens pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And I really like Daphne as a feminine character, that she has very feminine desires. She really wants the romance and she wants family and she really wants connection in that way. She really loves being with her big family. And she says, we have no secrets. It's all out in the open. And I liked that despite her innocence, because obviously she is unaware of sex.
The intimacies performed upon your person.
That she has a confidence and she has a wit. And I actually really liked the element of her character that she was the girl that everyone liked, but no one adored.
Yeah.
That I think a lot of women probably feel that way.
I do
that
too.
It's like, oh yeah, everyone wants to be my friend, but no one is going crazy how Simon says he burns for her. Or not a lot of men feel that way. I think that would be probably a very common feeling mm-hmm. for women of like, yeah, I'm good looking. It's not that Daphne has the poor complexion of Penelope because of her dresses.
God, I'm just so team put Penelope in a different color.
I know. It's
help a girl out.
It's so tragic because they're like, yeah, it's unfortunate. But if they just put her in a different color, it'd be fine. It's like, oh God. So that's not Daphne's situation. Like they say that she has brown eyes and brown hair, which isn't favorable coloring for the time, which everyone just loves the fair features, the fairest in the land. But obviously Daphne,
she's beautiful,
is beautiful. But that's her thing, is that she has been seen as a friend by a lot of men. And I think that's something that I haven't read a lot of. Mm-hmm. And maybe I personally haven't read any of it really in romance books. Like there's usually the girls that men don't pay attention to, but just in terms of, no, they like me,
so she's and they popular talk
to me and she's popular, but that isn't transferring to good romantic matches. That isn't transferring to really intense, passionate love. And so I really liked that premise for her. I thought that that was really realistic and modern mm-hmm. in a way, because I wouldn't even think of that being a thing in these circles.
She's had marriage offers.
Yeah.
Like we're meeting her where she's been through two seasons. She's had, what, four marriage proposals at this point. None of them are really doing it for her.
Nigel makes up a lot of those proposals.
I think it's just a very realistic place of frustration to meet a heroine in.
Yeah, she's not the wallflower.
No, it's just she's not getting what she really, really wants. And I also kind of like, because I haven't read a lot of heroines like this, that while Simon is well-traveled, experienced and everything, Daphne is, she calls herself the boring English girl who she doesn't have a desire to travel. She just wants to stay put. And
she's very happy with her life.
She is.
In that way.
She's very decisive in knowing what she wants. She wants to be a mother. She wants to have the connection in that way. She wants a husband that she loves.
Yeah.
I think compared to some other heroines, maybe she comes across as a more simple person. But I really love those aspects of her that, unlike a lot of other maybe like stronger heroines in a more physical sense, she knows what she wants.
Yeah. And I think it's important to see all types of heroines, because whatever a person's dream is, that's valid. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times, and this is something that's talked about in feminist discourse a lot, of just women are praised for having masculine aspirations. And that's great. Like, if you want to be the big corporate businesswoman and never have kids, or if you want to have kids but still have a really big career and have success in those ways, that's phenomenal. But also, I think in that a lot of people like poo-poo if you just actually want to be a stay-at-home mother and have a family and really focus on what it means to be a very present parent and have that be your job, that have that be more of what your life is centered around. And I think either way, I can get behind a heroine that just knows what she wants.
Yeah.
And I think it is refreshing that she's just very resolute in it. And she doesn't, obviously, because of the time, this is more of a norm, but there's no negative connotations around that.
I really love that, because I think it's like with feminism, women should be able to live the life that they want.
Yeah, whatever that may be.
That's it. Like, that can look like a million different things.
It's very simple.
I'm not someone that relates to Daphne in the sense that that's all I want, because I have bigger ambitions. I have creative projects, and I don't know if you want to call it career goals, but things in that realm that are extremely important to me. But I love reading a character that is like Daphne.
I just like reading characters that know what they're about.
Absolutely. And I love seeing it in this softer way, especially because this is a book about relationships, whether that's romantic relationships or relationships with her family. So I thought first 60% of Daphne was actually a really like comforting character.
Yeah, because at the same time, again, this is another thing that a lot of like the softer characters fall into, is that they are kind of nothing. Like, that's all they are, is their desire to be a mother and to have a family. However, I was laughing with Daphne. She had a strong wit. She's very clever. I loved right off the bat her not taking Simon's shit. I love her laughing at him because he begs to be teased. All of that. I was so behind Daphne.
I was too. And I loved the little moments. I mean, one that really got me was right after they were married and they're in the carriage going to the inn. Simon's obviously trying to avoid ravishing her in the carriage, and he pretends to be asleep.
Yeah. Oh my God. I was cackling.
She sees through it, because she has siblings. She has younger siblings. She has older siblings. And she's like, I know every trick. And she's watching him for 2 hours commit to that performance.
Yeah.
And she's just like rolling her eyes. And I just love that she is just so minded that way, especially with Simon, to see through his bullshit.
Yeah.
And sometimes kind of talk to him like a child when he's behaving like one. That she doesn't take certain things personally.
I know. I screamed when they have their meet cute and, you know, he's talking about like, what would your mom think of me being here when she told you not to be alone with me? And he's like very serious, tells her she'd tell you to be very, very afraid. And there's a pause and she just laughs in his face. And she says, oh, I'm sorry, but really you shouldn't be so melodramatic.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I'm behind Daphne. That I'm sold. A woman who can just laugh in a man's face.
When he's being ridiculous.
When he's being so serious, he's trying to seduce her with comments. And she's like, I know what you're doing. She's like, I might not know where this ends, but I know what you're trying to start.
Something that I actually really like, I mean, maybe this is more of a relationship thing too with her and Simon, but Daphne is someone who is kind of self-deprecating because she's never been someone's person. She doesn't view herself as the beauty. She views herself as very common in a lot of ways. And I love that, because Simon's been on the receiving end of those comments, that he's really good about helping her correct that.
That was actually one of my favorite parts about Simon, is that he does not stand for negative self-talk.
No.
Not when it comes to his lady.
No. And Daphne is none of the things that she says that she is. And I love that that was something in the story that was addressed. And I agree, that was one of my favorite bits of their relationship, and her her coming into a more confident place when it comes to herself.
I really liked it when, again, in that 60%, I liked that despite her innocence, she had a confidence. Yeah. Like in the garden, she's like, yeah, then leave. Knowing he won't leave. Mm-hmm. She mustered the confidence. And I like that about her, is that even though she's not like a world traveler or the most experienced literally in any sense of knowledge of taboo things or any of that, that she had a confidence when it came to her sexuality.
Yeah.
So I like that she had that confidence. And again, being feminine, I love that she has moments where she's like, you know what? I needed to cry. I know I did. She's like, I had too many feelings trapped inside of me. And so I needed to cry. But you know what? Now my mind is clear and I have to do what I have to do. And I'm like, that is so real to it be is. Like, I like, just need to cry really quick.
Like, I literally wrote that down in my notes. I was like, oh my God, I have done this more than once in my life where like, I need 30 seconds of ugly cry face. And it's like, okay, I'm good. Like, I literally, that's it.
Yeah.
I'm good. Move on. That I really
feel like
got
every
me.
Woman has been in that position where you're like, I need 30 seconds. Or you sit there and you're like, okay, do I cry now?
Mm-hmm.
Is now the time to cry? Because I need to cry.
When should I schedule my cry session?
When should
for?
I schedule my cry?
Let me get my playlist out, some sad music to really help it along.
Yeah. Let me go stare at myself in the mirror, see if that will bring anything along. That's just so real to have this, like, again, a woman of this time to go be like, you know what? Yeah, I needed to cry. I loved being with that feminine aspect of her character and that kind of feminine character.
I did too. And just going back to her confidence level for a second, like in the scene in the garden, I really loved, like you said, that she was the one that initiated that. But I also love that when it came to, she's like, I don't know how to kiss. I love that she was feeling herself in that moment and took charge. It's really difficult to like joyfully look at all aspects of that bit of her character, but in that moment, and then having the, but I don't actually know what I'm doing.
I know she's feeling herself. She's like, come hither, sir. And then as soon as he is ready, she's like, oh, wait.
But what do I do? Well, maybe we should talk about Simon on the note of some romantic things.
Yes, because we open up with Simon, and well, we really open up with his family, his parents, and their story, which I thought that was a really good intro to the book. I enjoyed it, and it was as sad as it was. And side note, when they make the comment about how she kept her hips at a 20-degree angle for a month, that made me ill.
I was really impacted by that prologue.
Mm-hmm.
The note after she's given birth and she slips into unconsciousness and then she slips away. The way that that was written, it's very simple on the page, but that I felt just really grasped the spirit of what a woman's life was to her husband.
Yeah,
at
as
the time.
He's riding away to go proclaim joy and the news of Simon's birth.
That was so upsetting to me personally. Like the way that that was written, I thought that was almost perfect in a lot of ways.
Yeah, that and just, I think, setting up for Simon as well, because obviously Simon's thing in this story.
Oh, does he have a thing?
He has a thing, is that he does not want to marry. He does not want to have children because he had this very tragic upbringing where he didn't speak. And then when he did speak later on, he had a stutter and his father very much rejected him for that. He was verbally abusive, was going to be physically abusive, just a terrible man, rotten to the core kind of father. And because of that, Simon doesn't want to carry on his name. He doesn't want to give him what his father so desperately desired. And we see it in the prologue with the suffering his mother goes through to give his father an heir, and just all the pain and suffering that came from this. I think the prologue for me really helped aid Simon's point of view.
Absolutely.
Of just how much suffering has come from the simple desire and will of this man to demand an heir, and all that goes into it. I think that really rooted something for me, even though a lot of that did come from Simon's mother. That really made things click for me. But Simon's whole thing is that if he couldn't be the son his father wanted, then he'd be the exact opposite. So going into a story where obviously it's like he is his own roadblock to their entire relationship, I really needed that prologue, because I got it. I think I was reading some reviews on Goodreads and I saw that a lot of people like really hated Simon, obviously being reluctant to Daphne in terms of giving her what she wants because it seems really simple to just have children. And it's something in the show that drives me nuts. But being in the book and seeing his point of view, I felt that a lot more. And before we get into how we feel about Simon as a love interest, I will say I really liked him as a character.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of aspects of his story that I really loved. I mean, I loved everything with his struggle with his stammer, but I really loved him talking about how the anger is the only thing he's had.
Yes.
And I think looking at it through that point of view in terms of what he keeps from Daphne, and we can talk a lot more about that because there is a part of me that's like rolling my eyes. Because what she says to him is correct about like, you are still being controlled by your father and all of these things. But for anyone who's had a history, whether it be with anger or like specifically anger with your family, having anger as the reason you're successful, the thing that makes you work harder and has gotten you to the levels of success that you have achieved, that's a really hard thing to let go of.
It is. And I really do love seeing the road that he takes with that. Like, I really loved the bit about him getting himself into Eton.
Yeah.
I loved watching how that shaped him in so many ways, that that anger and the trauma from the stammering really influenced all of that. So when you get to the end, when he's going through it, you do understand.
Yeah.
And to be clear, Simon drives me crazy.
Yes.
Throughout the book. On the show, I do not like him. I think...
No, I don't either.
He's obviously very attractive, but I do not like his character.
No.
At all. And so it was so, so nice, like you said, to get his point of view. Because at least I understand where it's coming from. And it does check out. If this is what has consumed your whole life, I mean, even how we end it, he's still kind of grappling with the idea of feeling excited about having a child because he's lived with that for so long. That's just very, very real. But I love that they have these conversations, that it does come out, that he's able to talk about it.
Yeah. And in the book, his stammer is still a problem.
Yeah.
Where in the show, we don't really see that. And I will say, being in those scenes where he's getting emotional and overwhelmed and it pops out, it's like my heart just breaks for him. I think that is something that really softened me to Simon.
It was so upsetting.
Even though I will stand by the fact that Simon is a giant red flag.
Oh my God, yes.
He's such a red flag. I mean, a man that lives his life and is motivated by anger is naturally going to be a red flag. I don't think you can be that way and not be a red flag.
No.
That just comes with the territory of what his struggle is. But I really like, and we've talked about a lot on Patreon, of just like the really hard conversations and being with characters that are struggling with things that make them really unlikable and really unpalatable in a lot of ways. And I liked that piece of Simon's character. I thought that was just so real to have this conversation about what does your life look like when your actions aren't driven by anger? Like, your motivation for everything you've done is now taken away. That's a really big kind of emptying of self, and then kind of like not knowing what to fill yourself up with.
Yeah. And I think even in just like the little ways of how his anger and his past informs how he's perceived in society, I actually really enjoyed that bit as well. The fact that people think he's aloof and arrogant because he doesn't speak very often because of his stutter and his confidence levels, and his thing is that he's all about control.
Yeah.
And in that society, that made him look like an enviable person. Like, he wanted to be in his inner circle because he didn't give his opinion freely. And so he's created unintentionally this reputation for himself. Everything with him just stems back to that. And I really liked seeing that play out in the really deep-rooted relationship pieces, but also just how he's generally perceived by society.
Yeah.
And obviously it's like, oh, he's sexy and mysterious. And it's like, well, he's this way because he is insecure about speaking.
Isn't that just like so what we have to unlearn as women?
Yes.
Where we're like, oh, he's sexy and mysterious. It's like, no, honey, he's traumatized. No, honey, he's toxic. Because I've dated guys like that where they don't like everybody, and it makes people want to go after them, and I'm the person that like doesn't give a shit about them, and then that's why they like me. But then you're in the relationship with that guy and it's like, oh, actually
this isn't a good time.
It doesn't feel good to be chosen because you're not the romance guy that once you're in it you're really sweet and all these things.
Yeah.
Like, that's for the books, ladies. The brooding aloof one, he's not the one.
He has a big red flag tucked away in his back pocket.
9 times out of 10 he's not the one. And don't think you're the other 1 out of 10 time.
Yeah, no, like you said, I really liked him as a character, and I did have a lot of moments where I softened towards him. So, like you said, when he stuttered, that really upset me. When he's just trying to get a hold of his emotions and just his struggle to express himself was just so heartbreaking because of what that does to him.
Yeah.
And I think also all the little moments when he's watching Antony and Daphne with their family and he's wondering, like, man, what must it be like to not be alone in the world? Because Simon is alone in the world. He has Lady Danbury as someone that was kind to him as a child, but that relationship isn't anything, at least that we're given, that's, they're not super close in that way.
It seemed like he just went to her for a few holidays.
Yeah.
And she was kind to him, but it wasn't like she visited him all the time or any of that.
Yeah, and he's been away traveling on his own. Like, he's really been disconnected from genuine relationships, or at least that's the impression that he's given.
And he's so disconnected that he's not even aware of all of the full proper etiquette when it comes to courtship. Like, he's really been disconnected for the majority of his adult life from society. So he has some issues with manners and proper behavior.
He does, and I do find it funny that he comes into town with every intention to stay out of it. Mm-hmm. And Antony's like, that's not how this works.
It's like, that's really cute. He's like, Simon, have you seen your face?
I know, you're very good looking.
Like, title aside, it's very sexy, if I do say so myself.
Well, let's talk about him as a love interest.
Not a fan.
Definitely not a fan.
Red flag, thumbs down. That's not to say that there weren't moments of him being a love interest I liked.
Yeah, they had great moments.
They had good banter.
They did. I think my favorite aspect actually of their relationship was more of the friendship piece of it.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it allowed them to be open with each other and talk about a variety of topics that I just don't think you would necessarily get into if you were only romantically pursuing someone or courting someone. So I liked the freedom that their characters had with each other, with all sorts of things with that. But, you know, when Daphne, who doesn't know his history at this point, makes a sweet comment about how he would be a good father because he seems good with children, and he snaps or abruptly leaves.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
He's very avoidant.
And then you learn about the father stuff and you're like, oh, no, thank you.
It's like, maybe you heal and then we date. Yeah, because I mean, from the start, we do have just his inner dialogue and some of his dialogue with Daphne. I'm like, you're an ass. Because even he's like, yeah, she's rambling on as women are wont to do. And I'm like, okay, you're an ass. He's staring at her boobs. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, you're an ass. I like that she catches him looking at her boobs in her mouth a lot.
And she's annoyed by it.
And she's like, very annoyed by it.
Are you even listening to me?
So right off the bat, he's very much an ass. So just like verbally, he's difficult in that way and just kind of can be very rude and flippant. And that's why it's so satisfying when Daphne just laughs at him and gives it back to him, because he just needs that. I will say, like you said, I love the moments of him giving the flowers to Violet, and like him and Hyacinth really made my heart melt.
Yeah.
And he does have really good love interest moments. I think anytime there's a love interest where he's like, I'm the master of self-control and like she's going to unravel it, I'm always going to eat that up. I absolutely adore that. I love the pieces of him like hurrying towards Gregory when he's on the gangplank. Yeah. He's like, he could fall into the ropes. Him just being connected to the family, I think, always warmed my heart.
That was definitely one of my favorite bits, is just him with the Bridgertons, like even with, obviously with Antony and their friendship, but like him and Colin when they're socializing at the ball, and then him with the younger kids, and him just even being at the dinner table watching the dynamic. It's like kind of given the opportunity to learn that families don't have to be like his.
Yeah.
I really liked that.
Yeah. I mean, he's very smooth. He has a way with words when he wants to. There were some points where I was like, don't try to make me fall in love with you. Like, you're being an ass. Do not make me fall in love with you.
It was very tempting.
Especially when there's moments of like when she falls into the bush.
I wasn't sure if that was supposed to be funny, but I found it hilarious.
It was hilarious.
The description of her flying into the shrubbery, into
they're
the
fighting.
Hedge.
She gets a flailing arm or a knock in the knees or something. Goes flailing into a bush and she is stuck.
And obviously we've just come off of the scene where she's exposed her breasts to Simon, but Simon is not the only one that sees them. Antony gets a glimpse, and that made me want to die.
That made me want to die a million deaths.
So that's just happened.
That's just happened.
And then she falls into the hedge.
And she falls into a hedge. But I like that in that scene that he's immediately like really worried and he's very gentle. I really loved gentle Simon.
I did too.
That when he's just being soft and sweet and he's like, I'm going to lift you out. Okay. And then he rips her out on two. I'm like, okay, we get the best of both worlds here where he's still like abrupt and straightforward, but he can be very, very gentle. And I like that once they were together and, you know, they're going to get married, he says he's going to do everything he can to be a softer husband. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he really keeps to that all the time. He does a bit, but not consistently. Not when it comes to his father. That's just his touchy point.
No, but I really did like at the wedding, his concentration on the vows. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really moving. Obviously, we know why he's doing it.
Yeah.
But just the fact that he wants to get that right. Because despite all of his stuff with his dad, and he's like, I'm never going to marry. He's happy to be married to Daphne.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he loves her. Like, he's loved her for quite some time.
He's like, I want to brush her hair. I'm like, oh my God, he's brushing her hair.
It's like those moments are like, so I love our sweet routine. And even before they get married, when it's like post duel, when she convinces him to marry her, that he's like, part of me is really excited, even though he's like, I need to give her an out and remind her that I can't have children, won't have children. But like, some part of him is being real about it, that he's excited, that he has feelings for her. It's just his anger and his hatred for his father is blocking his ability to freely express love in that way. It's like, I like those moments with him.
Yeah, I love those moments. And I love on his wedding night how he thinks about how it's about her.
Yeah.
It's not about him. Like, he will be her only lover, her first and only lover. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't want to sleep with her at the end because he wants to make it perfect for her. I'm like, okay, well, now I'm a little swoony.
I mean, I don't know if this like qualifies as a romantic thing, but I found it kind of romantic. The silliness of Daphne explaining what her mother failed to explain to her about their wedding night. Like, I love that they're a couple that can talk about it.
Yeah.
And the roller coaster of her believing him to be impotent.
His reaction to that. That was one of my favorite scenes, is him trying to handle the fact that she thinks he's impotent. She doesn't even know what it means. She doesn't even know what she's talking about. And her trying to recount Violet's conversation and him just not knowing what to do with himself because he just wants to die of laughter, but also probably just die.
Yeah. I loved that it kind of started there. And then he's obviously very comfortable with his own sexuality. So he can easily explain and show and teach in that way. But I liked that it started on that note. Maybe that doesn't feel like an intimacy thing, but I think if you are able to sit with someone in uncomfortable situations and get through it where it's not awkward, if you're embarrassed and like, you're like, I don't even know what I'm doing, but the other person is still sitting there with you and like talking you through it. I like that about them.
So yeah, it's those pieces of him being a love interest that I was very interested in. Again, him as a character, I was happy to be on the page with him and he made me laugh and giggle and kick my feet. However, he is a toxic man and I do not appreciate that he is rude to staff.
No.
That is actually potentially top two red flags, is he is mean to his maid and to the Bridgerton butler.
I loved him talking to the Bridgerton butler and the butler winning.
Yes.
And he's like, you must be very secure in your position. He's like,
yep, I am. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you and good day. Goodbye. So it's those pieces of Simon. Also, later in their relationship, when they're having a fight, there's a point where Daphne is legitimately scared of him.
Yeah.
And she is inching closer to the door, knowing that he potentially could hurt her. Mm-hmm. And then he does grab her by the arms and kind of is holding too tight. And he knows it. It's stuff like that, that especially later in the book, it's like, why? He was a problem at the beginning.
He has other problems that I'm already having to wrestle with. Like, I don't need these additional ones to be like, oh, this is like a real problem.
Yeah. So as a love interest, especially because of those things that I just mentioned, no.
Hell no.
No. There's nothing else to say other than
No.
Go to bed. Go to bed and think about what you've done.
I mean, he does think about what he's done.
With a bottle of whiskey in his hand. Well, maybe we should really get into their relationship, because like with their individual characters, it's like there were a lot of pieces that I really liked at the beginning. I mean, what snagged my attention and kind of sold me initially on Daphne, Simon, and their relationship is there's a line in their meet cute. In her inner dialogue, it says, "The Duke, although lean, was powerfully built, with broad shoulders and firmly muscled thighs. And in parentheses, it says, Daphne knew she wasn't supposed to notice such things, but really, was it her fault that current fashion trends dictated such snug breeches? And then she says, more to the point, he had a certain air about him, something almost predatory, something that hinted of tightly controlled strength and power.
Ooh. Ooh.
Tightly controlled strength and power?
Mm-mm. Well, hello.
Hello. I'm in it. And I'm like, I love a girl who's noticing his snug breeches.
I love that she blames it on the fashion.
Yeah.
It's not my fault.
No.
Look at it. Look at it.
Look at it. But I like that they really had an instant attraction and friendship, mm-hmm. that there wasn't like a barrier to entry when it came to their connection, that they just right off the bat are very connected.
Yeah. And I like that, going back to kind of how Daphne perceives herself, where she's like, I'm always the friend that no one has been, mm-hmm. is like left dazzled by the way I look or anything like that. And when he meets her, all of the air leaves his body at the sight of her. And she doesn't know it, but she gets what she wants in terms of how a man is attracted, mm-hmm. to her.
Yeah. And like you said earlier, I like the aspect of their relationship where, like, it's very sexy, but also it's not that serious. Like, they can laugh during sexy scenes. She teases him, all of that. They're very much just connecting and having fun and can be silly and it not be weird.
Well, yeah. And also, like, their relationship is supervised. Mm-hmm. So they don't have a lot of truly private moments. And Daphne even makes note of that, where, you know, if they're waltzing in a ballroom or they're having a picnic or something, they'll be sitting together, but there's people all, mm-hmm. around them. So this is also a romance that, up until they really have like sexy time in the garden and then they get married, even though their sexy time is interrupted by Antony and the hedge, they don't have that element of true privacy.
Mm-hmm.
So everything that they say is going to be under a microscope. And I thought that that was really interesting, where it's not that, like, they're constantly sneaking off together so, mm-hmm. they can say what they really think. It's they're having to be themselves in public.
Mm-hmm.
And I like using the trope of the fake attachment, where they can lean into that, where it's okay to come across as flirty. It's okay to come across as being interested in the other person.
Yeah.
Because it's a game. So they've built this like safety wall around them that allows them to be more open. And then obviously through that, they fall in love. I liked that.
Yeah. And I mean, Daphne in her inner dialogue falls in love very quickly.
It's the flowers for Violet that really gets her.
It's the flowers for Violet. And she's just very open, where, yeah, in that moment, she's like, yeah, I'd be a fool to not fall in love with him. And then a week later, she's like, yeah, I love him for sure. Mm-hmm. I'm in love with him.
Yeah. I really like, going back to the scene earlier that you referenced, where Antony's like, he's just not for you. Mm-hmm. And Daphne's like, I couldn't help but think that Antony was wrong.
She's like, I paid attention to the first half of that sentence, which was, he's a good man. And I'm going to think that the second part of that sentence, which is, he's not for you, is a big lie.
It's just optional.
That's just doesn't pertain to me. That's not my business. My business is the first half of that sentence and not the second half.
Daphne is really decisive.
She is.
And he's what she wants. I think you still need to examine that big red flag that he's holding. It's, if you've seen Les Mis, it's the same flag.
Yeah.
It's the same creator.
The Angel Ross flag.
One day more, Daphne. One day more.
One day more.
I mean, it did make me really sad when it comes to Daphne and their relationship, where because Simon is so intent on not being married and having, mm-hmm. children, that she thinks that it's her.
Yeah.
That broke my heart a bit. Because if you don't know, if you don't have the other explanation for what the hell is going on and what his problem is, there is no other way to take that.
Well, let me ask you, because I think we've been dancing around it a bit and we just need to talk about it.
Okay.
How do you feel about this setup where, you know, he does not want to have children? We know the reasons. Us as readers, we know the reasons. He goes to the duel ready to die because...
I'm sorry. Can we just say a quick note on duels? Like, this is one of the most absurd masculine things in history to me. And Simon, in this context of being like, it's fine.
I'll just die.
I'll just die. I'll win. I'll like stick it to my father. I'll just die.
I just heard Michael Ball singing Gethsemane when he's like, fine, I'll die. For those of you who don't know, that's the
Jesus
song
Christ
he
Superstar.
It's very dramatic.
I just look at Simon in those moments and like, are you freaking kidding me? So we kill ourselves, like kill ourselves, And poor Daphne, she's beyond the point of heartbreak. She just wants to save his life because he can't bring himself to the place where he just would marry her.
I know. I mean, to be fair, even though
what
I don't what? I'm like, I don't actually use this as a defense. I think they've only been in their courtship for 2 weeks.
Okay, but Simon, maybe in his inner dialogue,
I mean, nothing.
Back then, that like meant nothing. You would marry someone without knowing them or meeting them once. But it's like, Simon has established at this point that he could be friends with Daphne, that he is friends mm-hmm. with Daphne, that he desires Daphne, that he has feelings for Daphne, but he would rather die.
Than ruin her life.
But at this point, there's been a scandal, so her life is potentially already ruined.
Mm-hmm. It's very dramatic. I just think men have no business saying women are dramatic when they were out there doing their duels.
They're going to murder people.
I loved Whistledown's take on that. She's
I know.
They are so stupid and this is disgusting violence. It's gross.
It's just so...
Could it be me?
It's so absurd. And when you think of, I mean, looking at Alexander Hamilton and other historical figures who have died in a duel. And I understand that there are varying degrees of why you would challenge someone to a duel.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some of them are a little bit more understandable due to whatever crime has been committed. But over something like this, like where Antony would potentially not only become a murderer, mm-hmm. but do something that would traumatize his sister for the rest of her life.
My favorite is Antony says, you know, duels have been fought over less. I'm like, yeah. That is so embarrassing.
I know.
You guys should be embarrassed. Like, you should take a collective shame walk through the streets in silence because that is so embarrassing for your sex. That is so embarrassing.
I always think of, there's obviously a very well-known book called The Three Musketeers, but I grew up watching the Disney one and I love that version. But D'Artagnan in that gets in 3 duels within about 5 minutes for saying like a mere comment to someone. Yeah. And it's like, yeah.
I know, they're like, ugh, the women are so dramatic and they're chasing husbands. It's like, you guys are like fighting each other over an offhanded comment.
Because your ego can't take
it. Because you can't take it. You have not been emotionally regulated. You have no sense of how to handle yourself and you must kill. You
can't just say, I know that I'm not this way and like let it roll off. Oh, no. No, let me put a bullet in you.
Silly, goofy mood.
Let me put a bullet in you, but then also risk dying over something stupid like that. That it's like, I know that Antony is being the honorable brother and he's doing this for his sister. And like Simon's like, well, Antony, you know, loves Daphne so much and he values her honor so much that he wouldn't do anything but put a bullet through my heart. I understand the intention is good, but like, that's insane.
It's insane.
Like, dual culture is insane.
I just kept thinking like, oh my God, the Duke is doing an Alexander Hamilton. He's going to point to the sky.
Yep.
And Antony's going to hit him. And Antony's going to be like, oh my God, I'm not even a good shot. That's crazy.
I know. But I think it's just Simon's attitude towards the whole thing really just was something else.
Well, back to my question.
Sorry. I just really needed to talk about the duel.
It was like 10 minutes. Just like stupid, stupid duel men. Stupid. So we've established how we feel about the duel.
If anyone was wondering.
If anyone is curious. Where I was going with my question is I was going to ask, how do we feel that now once this duel is done and he thinks like, I'm going to give her one last out.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells her, I can't have children. You know, he's gone to the duel because he knows she wants kids. He's going to die for it. Our feelings on that aside. Those were the lengths he was willing to go to, was to die. And then he gives her another out. And she has a moment where she thinks about it. And, you know, she decides, I love him. And I'm going to prioritize a man I love rather than like unknown children that I do not have and do not exist.
Yeah. And she also makes the note that what if I'm barren? What if there's something like that?
Yeah.
That you just don't know.
She enters the marriage having to come to peace very quickly with the fact that maybe there's hope because she doesn't understand what the situation is of maybe they could have kids and you don't really know until you know. But she had to kind of make peace with the fact that that was the bigger possibility of them not having children. How do you feel about when she finds out, the events aside,
mm-hmm.
when she finds out that he won't have children, where do you stand on the side of the argument in terms of, it's like he lied, but not entirely. He was semi-honest.
Yeah.
And he did give her the chance. He did try to stay out of this marriage.
Are you asking me this because you know that I like to be informed?
Yeah. Where do you stand?
Overall, I really hate it.
I mean, before we get into it, I despise this. I despise this being the conflict.
You know, I don't know. I did think about it a bit reading it because, like you said, he has been clear. Mm-hmm. It's just the reasons, like the truth of why is a lie.
Yeah. And she says, you relied kind of on my stupidity, on my ignorance of marital relations.
I think that's a massive problem. And honestly, though, like, I think it would have been best for everyone for him to tell her the truth and say, like, I will not have children, because that is a different dynamic that I think would be way more off-putting to Daphne. Like, if he's trying to avoid this marriage, I think he was really stupid on that level. Mm-hmm. I don't agree with him, I think, doing it at all, but he should have just told her the truth, because that's like, ew. Like,
yeah. Well, like, that's her reaction. Yeah. She's like, oh, so
your father is in bed with us.
Yeah. She's like, oh, you're not your own man because you're still being controlled by your father, even though he's in the grave, and you're a coward for letting him still run your life.
So I'm like, is this I think I got angrier at him for it, because it's like, okay, you say that you don't want to marry her because you love her, but also selfishly, you are protecting your own ego, because if you say that to her, I just kind of feel like, maybe I'm going way too deep on this, but like, I just kind of feel like if that he would know that if he said that to her, that she would maybe have a reaction like that.
Yeah.
Of, oh, you're letting someone else call the shots in your own life, because this is a secret he keeps. There's no one to call him on it. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes him incredibly selfish.
Yeah, well, he is an incredibly selfish character.
But like, to a deeper degree, I mean, yeah, he is incredibly selfish. But I think it was just also really stupid on his part, if he truly didn't want her to marry him, to not tell her the truth, because I think that would have been it. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how Daphne would have been like, okay, you rely on hatred that much, it dictates your life that much, and therefore it will also dictate my life, that like, I can't have what I want, not because you don't actually want it. I like that she brings it up in the conversation of, have you even asked yourself, like, what do you want?
Yeah, she says it's a different conversation. It's a different thing. If he doesn't want kids, just because he doesn't want them.
And I like that she brings that up, because she was presenting herself to be more understanding if that was the case. Mm-hmm. If he's like, this is just not for me. But because that's just not what his truth is.
Yeah.
It makes me really despise him. And I understand like why Daphne would react that way in thinking that, oh, you think that I am an idiot. Mm-hmm. Like, you think that I'm simple, and you did take advantage of that.
Yeah.
But you don't respect me enough to tell me the truth about your life. So I don't like that he did that. Like, I think it was just the bad call on all sides of it. I think there is an argument to say, well, he was clear with her that he wouldn't have children.
Like, he gave her ample opportunity to say no. But then at the same time, what is she going to do? Let him die.
Well, that's the thing. If it's like, oh, Simon, like, he can't have children. Like, you do view someone differently, where it's like, this isn't his fault. This isn't his call.
Yeah.
That's a different situation than choosing not to because of the insane hellfire that's coming out of you because of your father who's passed away at this point. So I think that that would have been really helpful for Daphne to see Simon's true side before making that choice.
Yeah.
What about you?
No, I agree. But it was something that I did sit there with, and I'm like, he was clear.
He was.
It's just he was misleading, and that's not fair, and not being honest in your marriage when, I mean, he hasn't said that he loves her, and I know he's grappling with just trying to trust, and I don't know. I was trying to like be a little bit more objective of like, you know what? They haven't been together that long, and he's been avoidant his whole entire life, and he's been alone, and would it be realistic for him to tell her his deepest, darkest secret, essentially, and his deepest, darkest shame when he's told no other soul about it? So I was trying to think of it from that point of view, and I think I can have sympathy from that end, but at the end of the day, it doesn't justify the actions.
I went through that as well.
I went through a lot of phases of how I felt about it.
But here's also the reality, is that they're married now, which means like they're in it for life. And the act of pulling out, like, while Daphne might not understand that at the beginning of their relationship, life is long. And Daphne, I think at some point, would wise up to what was going on.
Yeah.
So I think the fact that he got away with it for as long as he did was kind of surprising. Obviously, Mrs. Coulson is the one that drops the comment about the seed that sticks with her. But I don't know. It's like, especially if you're a married woman, if you're speaking with other married women, there tends to be some kind of conversation or hinting at things like that. And at some point in her life, I think she would understand what was going on. Obviously, it didn't take very long.
No.
So I don't really understand like what Simon was thinking, that he could just do this for the rest of his life. Bad decision. Foolish decision.
Absolutely. Terrible decision.
But how did you think this was going to go?
I did think about it, though. I'm like, no, you're definitely wrong. That was definitely wrong. I just wanted to make sure I thought it was wrong because I thought it was wrong, not because I was just reacting.
You felt like you thought it should be wrong?
Yeah.
No, I think it's wrong. My morals. But I'm also someone that I think the truth 99% of the time is always the best option.
Yeah. I mean, the end of the book was just wackadoo, because from then on, that's when he gets really angry and he grabs her. And then obviously it leads into what she does to him.
I do want to talk about how that was handled, because obviously after the Mrs. Coulson talk, she is having a think. She's also keeping an eye out for his stutter, which I didn't like, because Simon can sense that. And
he's like, why is she staring at my mouth?
Yeah, like I felt bad for Simon. And that's like, stop, like just stop, you know, like stop looking for it. But Daphne is presented as an innocent, obviously. And when Simon comes into her room drunk, and I hate this because I thought drunk Simon was so funny.
Yeah.
I was really enjoying that scene until I wasn't.
Yeah.
So he's drunk. He doesn't want her to leave him. And then she gets this idea because he is aroused. Like he's
in his sleep.
In his sleep. And so she initiates and he's encouraging her. Again, he's drunk.
And he was asleep.
He's verbally saying things like, this feels really good. And it was really difficult to read that scene. And my mind wanted so badly to find some loophole or lens for it to just not be what it was.
Yeah.
For there to be a misunderstanding, for there to be something like that. And it's like, she's controlling the whole situation.
And she feels powerful when she's doing this.
She does.
Which really made me sick.
She's very clear on her intention. And even after, when he's like, do you realize like what you've done? Like, she's holding her knees in because she's like, I'm not going to let any of him escape me. Like, she's holding on to that. And then we have that big scene with him where he freaks out and he starts stuttering. And that ripped my heart apart because she was the predator in that situation. Like, she assaulted him. Like, that is
she
rape.
Raped him.
Then later, I think what I really had a hard time with, besides all that, is that Daphne is sitting on her own and she's like, I'm not going to be sorry about what I did.
Oh my God.
And she's going through her thought process of like not feeling bad about it at all. And then at some point she's like, well, maybe I did use him. And she starts considering that. And that just kind of blew my mind that there was no thought up until that point of what she was doing was wrong.
Yeah, I don't know if this is relying on the concept that if you don't know about sex, you can't know about consent. But you can know about consent without knowing about sex. We have consent in other forms of life. I just didn't know what to do with that. Obviously, I watched it in the show. We saw the show first. I despised that. I was one of those viewers that was so confused because I'm watching this and I'm thinking, this is assault.
Yeah.
What she does in the show. And I had heard people, and this is a faux pas of mine, I didn't look into how it was different. I just heard people saying like, oh, that's just not how it is in the book. And when I heard people say that, I thought it meant that she didn't do anything like that in the book. So I think if I would have known that this was in the book, I don't know if I would have chosen it for us, to be honest.
But also with Daphne, I think if you take the sexual aspect out of it, she brought up when Simon was wanting to stay in her room, the idea that you wouldn't force me to do that. She understands the concept of forcing someone to do something against their will.
Yeah.
That's
what I mean. Like,
what the situation is.
Exists outside of sex.
So, and it's been addressed by her. So, you know, in a sexual context, that's called rape and assault.
Yeah. So reading it here, first of all, I was surprised because I thought it wasn't going to be in the book. I just thought that wasn't going to be a thing. I thought maybe like they have sex and he doesn't pull out and then he has to tell her. I thought it was going to be something like that.
I was hoping and praying that it was. Like, I was really trying to be optimistic because I too had heard that it's different in the book. I didn't look into what that meant either.
I know, and I should have.
And it's like, there's some things that are different in the book than from the show, obviously. And so I was like, maybe this is one of them. And then it was just so much worse.
it broke my heart. It was actually really, really hard for me to read because, first of all, just what's happening, but his reaction and him stuttering and saying, don't come near me, like you did this, and his shame. And of course, it's even hard to read that because he's looking at it through a lens of, oh, she's making me stutter, which like that's really heartbreaking. But as a writer, she's not acknowledging through Simon's perspective the fact that he is assaulted as much. Like Simon's hurt isn't coming from that.
Yeah, well, especially with Simon later when he's thinking back on it, he has the thought of, maybe I did encourage her. Like, maybe I was complicit in this. Like, maybe this wasn't her fault.
It's like, no, honey.
That was so incredibly sad to me. And I almost felt like towards the end of the book when the Bridgerton boys bust into the house and are meddling in their marriage, I almost felt like as a reader, the characters were kind of telling us the same thing of like, it's not your concern how we work it out. Like, this is something within a marriage and it's our business, because none of that was really addressed or resolved, like you said. So leaving the book, it just kind of felt like, oh, as a reader, I guess this isn't my business. That's almost like reading that how I felt, because it was never given the attention where we're able to kind of work through it.
Yeah, because the only line we get from Simon to her is he says, I didn't like what you did.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't like it. But that's it. I know that specifically, like, having alcohol be present, that conversation around consent is much different than it was. I mean, I wasn't very old in 2000, but I feel like it really wasn't until, like, the last, like, 5 or 10 years that being very clear about, like, if you're drunk, you can't consent.
Yeah.
That's been more of a topic recently. But then her choosing to hold him to her and, like, also having that element, it's not even just one thing. It's, like, there's levels of assault that is happening. And even if the time was different, there's just no excuse for it. And it just broke my heart, perplexed me. It kind of made me mad, actually, because obviously it's something to be mad about. But also, it's just not necessary. Like, it's just not. I am all for having dark elements and tragic things happen in books to learn from them. And we obviously see assault in books, and it's important to have things represented. But not like this. This is not the way you do it. And this is not the context in which you do it, because this has, it's like a romanticism to it, because it's all okay. It's like things like this, when present in books, need to be demonized, and it wasn't. And that's very, very tragic.
Yeah, and just the fact that the story continues after that with Daphne praying to God that she's pregnant.
Again,
not seeing true fault when it comes to her for that.
I just think it was completely unnecessary. Like, I just think it should not be there.
No, it shouldn't be there at all. And because it is there, it just taints the rest of the story. So there's so many moments with Daphne that I love. Like I mentioned, the kiss in the garden or her being the initiator, that after that, it's like, oh, this doesn't feel good anymore.
Yeah.
Like I wrote some of that stuff down and like, oh, favorite moments of the book. And then as I was typing it out, it's like, oh God, that like that doesn't feel good anymore.
Doesn't feel good anymore.
It feels
tainted.
Tainted. And I don't want to say like foreshadowing, because that's not what it is. And I know that, but it's hard to like look back
on absolutely. That.
So no, I agree. It was absolutely unnecessary. I think it was a huge disservice to the story, to the book, to the tone of what this book is. And I just despise that it's there.
Yeah. So while there was a lot of joy and fun stuff in the first book, and again, I will continue reading the book series.
Yeah.
I personally feel comfortable knowing that going forward, the conversation about this is very different. And it's like maybe someone explained something to her and she changed her writing. I don't know if she's ever talked about this. For whatever reason, people claim that it is not this way going forward. So I personally, in my life, feel comfortable going forward with the book series.
Yeah.
If other people don't, I completely understand. That's everyone's choice to make. But because there just were a lot of things, like that event, as well as him always saying, you know, legally, I own you.
Yeah.
Just things like that. It's like, you know what? I enjoyed a lot of this book and I really loved the writing style. Like that was something I really, really enjoyed. But there was enough here that I would understand if people were put off. And I think I would also recommend to others, just skip it. Go on a summary site, get the information, or even read the book up until that point.
It makes me think of people who, because I know actually more than one person that does this, that loves to watch The Sound of Music, but they turn it off before it gets to the Nazis. Just read the first 60-70%.
Yeah.
And then just know that they end up together and everything's great. Maybe just moving away from it a bit. it just made me really sad to read the ending, because I really did like a lot of how the story wrapped up. You've referenced these conversations earlier, but I really like how they talk about the fact that he holds on to his anger because it's all that he had. Like, they have a lot of really great conversations that are really healing for his character that allow him to eventually release that anger and that hate.
He talks about how it's time to release the hate and hold on to love. It's like, what are you choosing to hold on to now?
Yeah. And that's when she has that conversation with him about, have you ever asked yourself, like, what do you want? They do have a few things like that. And one of my favorite moments actually between them is when he's come around to the idea of having children. And he's being very honest about, like, I don't even know how to be excited about it because I've spent so long being against it. So he's not like, yeah, I can't wait. He's open to it now. He wants to give Daphne what she wants and he wants to choose his life now. But I love that he is so worried about the idea of having a child and that child suffering like he did. I really loved that exchange between them where she asks him, you know, would you deny your child if they stuttered? And he says, absolutely not. And she says, then I have nothing to worry about.
Yeah, then our child won't suffer.
Our children. And I love those conversations. I just hate how it's like the feeling of the book feels ruined because of what came before. But I do love the note that it ends on with that, because that is just such a big thing for him. And it obviously shows that Simon is capable of love like that, like that he would be a good father. It's just everything has held him back. And now he's having the space to imagine his life differently. So I like the note that it ends on there. It's just there's a big dark cloud over it.
There's a shadow over it. And you know what? I did like the epilogue.
I did too.
I love getting to hear their ABCD children. And I love Simon being so mad at Whistledown.
Oh my God.
I loved the mirroring to him and Violet, because that's how we start the book, is with Violet being so upset. And Daphne says some of the same lines that she told her mother. And I'm like, this is hilarious. Like, Simon would eventually
they get like mad the by gossip this. Boys like gossip too.
This is the phenomenon of like when you're watching your girl show and there is a man or boy in the room, they're like, no, I don't want to sit and watch that, but then they stand there for the whole hour and then all of a sudden they're asking you questions about like, oh, why would so-and-so on Love Island do that? And
I know,
like, just sit down. And they're like, no, I can't,
because then it means that I'm actually watching it.
That's what the energy Simon was giving.
He's like, I get it for you. And she's like, it takes a minute for it to get to me because you're reading it. And the book officially kind of ends. I know there's a couple epilogues. I stopped reading the second epilogue because there were spoilers that were coming out in it.
Yes.
So I got the main gist of what happens at the beginning of it.
Like 20 years from now.
We stopped. But I do like that it ends on the little peek into the mysterious Lady Whistledown writing. And obviously we've watched the show.
No spoilers.
We know who it is. But I like that we're getting, it's like a little tease that we're going to have more from her and that maybe we'll get into her identity.
I loved her presence at the beginning of each chapter. She had some good zingers.
She did.
I like the one about men are sheep. Where one goes, the other will follow.
Yeah. So like you, I feel comfortable moving forward into reading the other books. So I'm going to take people's word for it that what happened in this book was something that will not be repeated. Because I really just love the Bridgerton group.
I love
them. I want to get to know them more as characters. And again, the first 60%, it was just so nice to read.
Yeah.
It was a joy to read. It was
just
light
fun
and sweet and sexy. And
sometimes you just don't want to think that hard while reading.
No. Sometimes you just want to be entertained.
Yeah.
And I am someone that, like, I love a good, dense, deeply emotional, tormenting kind of book. Love stories like that. But sometimes it's just nice to, like, sit down and enjoy something light. So in that way, the first 60% was so for me.
So for me, that first 60%.
Well, maybe it's time to move into some rapid fire.
I think it's time. So, Megan, rapid fire. Favorite scene?
I would say one that stuck with me was probably the family dinner. I really liked everyone being at the table together and Simon being introduced to their like somewhat unconventional way of being together, because children usually don't eat.
The peas are flying across the room.
The rest of the family. And on top of all that, Anthony being miffed, staring at them while eating. Like him having to be separated from Anthony and Benedict, I think. That had everything that I wanted in it.
Favorite character?
in the first 60%, I would have been tempted to say Daphne. Mm-hmm. That's not my answer anymore. So it's like, it's between Antony and Colin. Maybe Colin. Because okay. I am really looking forward to getting to know him more.
Favorite romantic moment?
Again, I mentioned this a minute ago, but I did, before the rest of the book happened, I like the scene where Daphne decided that she wanted to kiss the Duke in the garden. Mm-hmm. Like, I like that she had that turn of, you know what, this is something I want. And his response is to, in so many words, acknowledge that he does have feelings for her.
Yeah.
Like, I like that they're forced to confront that and talk about it. And just the fact that she wants to kiss him but doesn't know what she's doing, but she's going for it anyway, that she has that courage and confidence.
It's the sentiment that she shares on their wedding night when she's talking about how he's in control physically, but she realizes that she has a different kind of control because he's so besotted with her, that there's a power in that as well. And yeah. Like, that's a feminine power kind of situation.
Yeah, I really liked that.
Favorite LOL?
I had a lot.
I heard you laughing a lot. I was sitting right next to you.
I think I'm going to have to give it to Antony in the scene.
Just Antony.
Yeah, basically just Antony. Antony in the scene when they're having the family outing and Daphne and Simon are talking about Antony. And they're like, look, he knows that we're talking about him. He's so mad.
He's so upset.
Just the visual that I had in my head. Oh, it's just so good.
Did you have a cry?
I didn't have like an actual cry, but like I mentioned at the beginning of the episode,
you had like a theoretical cry.
The prologue, like, it really upset me. The note about his mother passing away, and then when Simon is so overcome that he's stuttering.
Yeah.
That, like, I didn't cry, but I felt unwell and like really upset. So
it was like an emotional barf.
It was an emotional barf.
And finally, date, marry, kill the Bridgerton older brothers, Antony, Benedict, Colin.
This is a tough one because I love them all, but I would probably marry Colin, date Antony, and I'd have to kill Benedict because I just don't know him.
I just don't know him as well.
And that's just going off of the book at this point in time.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I would do. All right. Well, your turn. Favorite scene?
I had a lot of scenes that I really, really loved, but I really loved when they're in the garden. I love that moment for her, but there's a piece of inner dialogue that he has in the garden scene that is just so romantic and also very, very sexy that I really loved, because I think I've read a lot of romance at this point where I think some of the inner dialogue about, like, I love her and I burn for her, sometimes it just doesn't hit as hard because it doesn't feel revolutionary. But there's a couple paragraphs of inner dialogue for him where I was like, I actually really, really like this. And I think that took me by surprise because it's not usually the inner dialogue of the romantic hero that gets me, because I'm just used to it. I know you like her.
Yeah.
I know you love her. But what he's saying in his inner dialogue in that scene, I really, really loved. So I think I'll say that. I know that's not very specific. And you guys are like, I don't even know what that says. But
who was your favorite character?
Like you, I would have said Daphne for that first 60%. But I will also say Colin. God, I loved him. I mean, I agree that Antony's right there because Antony provided me with endless joy and laughter. But Colin, he has a special place in my heart.
Yeah. Favorite romantic moment?
I'll give two because one's little. I really loved him brushing her hair.
That was such a lovely detail.
He's like, I love our little routine and, you know, I want to brush your hair. I thought that that was so sweet, especially when he's just like big, bad, brooding Duke. I love soft moments for male characters like that. But I really did like the scene when he brought her the engagement ring. I like that he chose it for her.
I know too.
Obviously there's a connotation of he doesn't want to give her something from his family because he doesn't like his family. But I love that he went out and chose something that was for her, and he said, I want you to like it because you're gonna wear it, like, this is yours. And he did choose something that she liked. I think that's every girl's dream, is to have a man choose out an engagement ring that you like without having to tell him.
Well, also the fact that he picked an emerald because of the green in her eyes, that she never noticed that he noticed something about her, and she was so delighted. And when he told her about the green eye thing, that she's like, well, for the rest of the day my eyes are green. And
I agree
that was such a really cute scene,
especially because it's a little awkward because it's after the duel and they're talking and it's fine, but also there's like a little bit of distance. And I thought that that was a really kind of sweet, vulnerable moment for him.
No, I hardcore agree. Favorite LOL scene?
I had a lot, and I've mentioned a lot of them. I think because honestly, Antony is just,
he's everything.
A big laugh. Him with the letter, I just like couldn't. But I think I will give it to Daphne in the carriage watching Simon fake sleep.
2 hours.
2 hours. Just the situation and her reaction, because it says Daphne stared at him
hard.
He was faking it. His commitment to when she's like shoving him and she's like, wake up.
Yeah.
And he kind of makes like the sleepy noise and she's like, oh my God, he's good.
I know. She's like, he should join Colin on the stage.
He's doing the I just woke up noise.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I'm just a cute little sleepy Duke. And she's like, I'm going to murder him. I mean, speaking of that, anytime Antony said, I will kill him, I'm going to kill him. That's Antony's catchphrase, is I'm going to kill him.
I mean, I believe it with him. He would if he needed to.
He choked him. I also, there was a choking scene. It's choke time.
Yeah.
I know, in my notes, I was like, oh, good. Boy choke time.
Did you have a cry?
I didn't, but I will agree that the prologue and then every time Simon stuttered,
yeah,
that really got me. I felt that in my body. Yeah. Emotional barf, for sure.
And lastly, date, marry, kill, Antony, Benedict, Colin.
I'm going to mirror yours. I have to marry Colin. I love him. He's my favorite. Cute. And I will date Antony because I love him, but he's silly. And I would just roast him the entire time. It'd be fun for me. Maybe not for him. I would roast him. And yeah, I'll kill Benedict, even though on the show, I think Benedict is adorable. The cutest.
Well, we did it. We did it. Did the Duke and I. And I am looking forward to continuing the story.
I am as well. And let us know, you guys, if you want us to continue the stories here on our podcast.
Yes.
Megan and I have a private reading life.
But we also have a public one.
But we also have a public one.
We would genuinely consider doing it and maybe switch off every other week or just kind of slowly work our way through it if we felt like an overwhelming amount of our listeners would enjoy that.
Yeah, and we could always take it book by book. We're really open to whatever you guys want to hear. If you are big Bridgerton fans and a lot of you like want to go through the series with us, that's something we would love to do. We are no longer actively reading our Sarah J. Maas books for Patreon. Patreon right now, it has all 31 episodes. That's right.
Did we do 31 episodes?
Yeah, I counted. We did 31 episodes.
Holy shit. I can't believe we did that many.
Yes, I'm the mathematician of the podcast, and we did 31 episodes, and all 31 are sitting there ready for you on Patreon. So we are no longer doing month to month. You can go and just pay for however long it takes for you to listen to all those. But that is a closed collection, complete collection for now. We will do an updated episode whenever Sarah releases her next book, but we are not going forward with doing other series over on our Patreon. That's a choice we made just based off of our schedules and other things going on in our work life. So we are open to continuing series in general if there is a big cry for it.
Yes.
Here on what we call our normal podcast, not our Patreon podcast.
And we do have a couple books that we will be reading on this podcast that we've started the first books on as well, that they just didn't make it to our Patreon because Sarah J. Maas consumed our lives.
Yeah.
But we will be reading things like Ruthless Vows and Iron Flame as well. I know that we've been asked about that. So we're currently traveling and we just can't handle the big reading load at this moment.
As if that could fit in my backpack.
Yeah. So
I could not fit Iron Flame in my backpack at this point.
So don't worry. It's upcoming within the next probably couple months.
Mm-hmm.
But we are still going to wrap those up. So we haven't forgotten. It's just our lives were stolen by the three fantasy series that SJM wrote. But yeah, like Kate said, if there are series that you as a collective group are really passionate about, we would love to hear about it and consider doing it on this podcast.
Yeah. So let us know if you would like us to go forward with the Bridgerton series or really any other series here on our podcast. Like I said, if you want to go on the SJM journey, that is over on Patreon. You can find a link in the show notes. You can binge listen. That is a journey that made us laugh, cry, and barf. And you will hear all about that over there.
And also, the reason that we are currently in the UK is that we are getting ready to go take our wonderful, beautiful, bookish travelers on our Scotland fantasy tour. So we are heading out on that in, oh my gosh, 2 weeks at this point. So if you are interested in going on one of our future tours, we're going to be launching 2 tours in October. Make sure that you go join our wait list, which you can find through links on Instagram, and make sure that you send us your email address so we can send you all of the updates, which will be launching probably within the next couple weeks. So we would love to travel to Scotland with you and have book club time.
And when we come back in 2 weeks, we are going to be doing a get to know us episode.
Because we haven't done that.
I don't know if you guys feel like you know us or not. Oh my God, do we feel really mysterious? Oh my God, I'm mysterious. Yeah, so we thought it was about time that we just had an episode where you guys can submit questions, let us know what you want us to talk about. You can submit questions over on Instagram. I will be posting a story the day that we publish this episode that you can go submit questions or just DM us. And yeah, just let us know what you want to know about us.
And it can be bookish things. It can be unhinged things. It can be whatever you want.
Can be dark personal secrets.
We're open.
We want to give the people what they want.
So that's what we're going to be doing for our next episode.
So in the meantime, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to our podcasting channel. That way you can see when we post new episodes. It also really just helps us get seen and helps us expand our podcast. And also make sure, like I said, go to Instagram. Let us know what you want us to come back with next week when we talk all about ourselves. It's narcissism week.
Yeah, so be sure to send any and all questions to us as soon as possible, because we'll be recording pretty quick. But until then, until we next meet where we talk all about us.
Until it's meet week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.